Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is 14 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Monday morning, the 30th of September, and we welcome you to the discussion. We have a great group and a lot to talk about, so we will get started. We do welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, whatever you'd like to share with us. We would we'd like to share it back with our audience, if appropriate. Panel at WAMC.org. A reminder, the lockbox is open. We need your help on the lockbox. We look to get to the $500,000 point, otherwise the halfway point in the drive before we even start the drive, which will be, I believe, 3 weeks from today. So we have to make some money and do some work there. The lockbox open now. We need your help. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And as soon as you go to our website, you'll see right there how you can help us. It's that simple. We'll remind you of that throughout the morning and throughout the program. We welcome investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo to the proceedings.
Good morning,
Rosemary. How are you? Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson, is here. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
UAlbany associate professor and area head of behavioral neuroscience, Ewan McNay, is here. Good morning.
Hey there.
How are you? And Dan Irizarry of Capital District Latinos is here. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. How are you, Joe?
We're doing fine. Thank you. So you're going to be busy. This is, we should mention that October is Hispanic Heritage Month, and you've got all kinds of things going on beginning on the 4th and the 5th. And so how can people, what's going on and how can people find out more about that?
So at our, at the Capital District Latinos, and thank you for that joke, Capital District Latinos, it has a cultural empowerment and community engagement center where that it calls home. It's at 160 Central Avenue. And happy Hispanic Heritage Day to everybody out there. And what we want to do is we want to share all of the wonderful culture that Hispanic heritage is really all about. And so October 4th, everyone, that's this Friday, between 4 and 5:30, we have the pleasure, with the sponsorship of the Martinez Gallery, of hosting Martin Rubio and Alexis Mendoza, two abstract artists. And by the way, Martin Rubio is blind. He's a blind sculptor, so it's fascinating to see the type of work that he produces. And Alexis Mendoza is a painter, and they will be both on hand. The next day, October 5th, we have at 1 o'clock a real actual exhibition opening. The October 4th is the cold opening. And so we'll have the abstract painters there to talk about their work. And then you'll be able at 2:30 to do your own work with their instruction. So that's going to be a really fun time. And then not to leave out music, because music is such a vital part of our heritage, at 3:30, my good friend Walter Ramos and Los Trovadores de Bolero Blues, the troubadours of Bolero Blues, will be there. So please come by. There will be food. There will be drink. There will be lots of people. And October 14th, we have a tertulia, which is what the Europeans used to call a salon. And we're going to have just people come in and share poetry, written work about Indigenous Peoples Day. So we're not going to celebrate Columbus, although, yeah, hats off to him. But or heads off to him,
yeah,
whatever you prefer.
Yeah.
We're going to celebrate Indigenous people and their work and contributions to the beautiful culture of Latin America.
Hey, Dan, you had me at We Have Food.
We have some fabulous Latino restaurants that will be catering the events, so please come.
Is there a website for people to find out the schedule?
Well, we are working on our website, but you can reach us on Facebook, so Capital District Latinos. On Facebook.
Excellent. Capital District Latinos on Facebook. It's the Hispanic Heritage Month 2019 events by Capital District Latinos Cultural Empowerment and Community Engagement Center, and a lot going on. And Dan, we always love having you here, and thank you for sharing all the cool stuff with us. Good, good stuff. All right. Let's talk about bad, bad stuff. Remember Thomas Bossert?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He was the, I didn't initially, because it was so long ago.
Yeah.
It was like 2 years ago. he served as President Trump's first Homeland Security advisor. And he got really fed up and very, very upset because he kept on telling the president, look, this whole conspiracy theory about the Ukraine and it having an impact on the election is not true. So then all of this happened before the president pressed Ukraine this summer to investigate his Democratic rivals. Thomas Bossert, who served as President Trump's first Homeland Security advisor, said he told the president that there was no basis to the theory that Ukraine, not Russia, intervened in the 2016 election and did so on behalf of the Democrats. Speaking out for the first time, Mr. Bossert said he was deeply disturbed, quote unquote, that Mr. Trump nonetheless tried to get Ukraine's president to produce damaging information about Democrats. Mr. Bossert's comments on the program this week and in a subsequent telephone interview underscored the danger to the president as the House moves ahead with an inquiry into whether he abused his power for political gain. Other former aides to Mr. Trump said on Sunday that he refused to accept reassurances about Ukraine, no matter how many times it was explained to him, instead subscribing to an unsubstantiated narrative that has now brought him to the brink of impeachment. We have a lot of various aspects or facets of the impeachment story to talk about this morning. I would like to start here because it's one place that gives us a sense a little bit to the backstory. Rosemary, you want to start?
Okay, I'll start. It was really disturbing to me that the president was golfing this weekend with the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which would be likely to hear any sort of impeachment proceedings. That's depressing. And this guy continues, Lindsey Graham is who I'm talking about, continues to see that there's not enough evidence of anything or for anything. I mean, I don't know what you need for quid pro quo. Maybe Sarah can address that later. It seems all to be there, at least circumstantial evidence. So this guy comes up and starts saying, yeah, you know, he's pursuing basically a debunked conspiracy theory. And I thought that sounded really encouraging for the Democratic side. Then he goes on Twitter and says, yeah, but I don't see anything here that's impeachable. What the heck would be impeachable if not what we're seeing? The president, meanwhile, is bashing spies in the White House who have helped lead to his outing on this matter, and has warned of a civil war. I mean, it just gets crazier and crazier, and the Democrats continue to be warned by everyone, including us on this program, that they have to proceed quickly but with care. It's so dicey.
The Trumps are coming out, or excuse me, the Trump tweets are coming out fast and furious this morning. One of them, just from a moment ago, Representative Adam Schiff illegally made up a fake and terrible statement, pretended it to be mine as the most important part of my call to the Ukrainian president, and read it aloud to Congress and the American people. It bore no relationship to what I said on the call. Arrest for treason?
Oh, my God. It was stupid, and I criticized it. But how is that illegal? And what he did in the phone call to the president of Ukraine, how is that not illegal? I don't get it.
Fake whistleblower is a hashtag he is starting. Again, the president of the Ukraine said there was no pressure put on him by me. Case closed. Actually, the president of Ukraine did not say that.
Right.
The president jumped in to say that he
yes.
said that,
mm-hmm.
but that
yeah.
is not what. Who changed the longstanding whistleblower rules just before some middle of fake whistleblower report drained the swamp? After many years, this is all within like the last half hour. After many years, the United States is finally waking up to Beijing's plans and ambitions to pass the dominant economic and military superpower in the 21st century. What's happening now is the U.S. is finally responding. Thank you, President Trump. This is taking place in trade. It's taking place in military competition. Happy birthday, China. He retweeted the Trump, the Schiff statement. I don't know exactly what that is. The fake whistleblower complaint is not holding up. It is mostly about the call to the Ukrainian president, which in the name of transparency, I immediately released to Congress and the public. The whistleblower knew almost nothing. Its secondhand description of the call is a fraud. The greatest witch hunt in our country, and it just it goes goes on.
Well, he has to stop it now. Because when I read the complaint,
the whistleblower complaint?
The whistleblower complaint. The thing that stood out to me was that the White House staff have been circumventing protocol to place things in a secure vault. Mm-hmm. There are other things in that vault, we learned this weekend. And the Russians say,
Please don't
look in there. Yeah,
that was hilarious.
Yeah, please, maybe just keep that to yourself.
Nothing to see.
So I think he's trying to stop the inquiry before it gets underway. He's not going to be able to. I also worry about the identity, not the New York Times publication of the identity of the whistleblower, because as they pointed out, everybody in the White House knew 4 days after the first internal CIA complaint that this person was in the White House and at the CIA. So those are not necessarily critical details for this person's identity. But the president tweeted out this weekend that he wants to know the name and meet this person.
Face him.
And some of the conversations that are under scrutiny currently involve Khashoggi. And it's terrifying to think, you know, that he was having conversations with the Saudi family and others. And all of a sudden he wants to meet the whistleblower. They need to keep him very safe. We think it's a man.
Actually, a female name has been pushed out as a possibility. So I don't know that we know that.
Yeah, we don't. There is a lawyer who's on the case, who's an Albany Law alum, Mark Zaid. So I've been following his Twitter feed too.
Interesting. Well, you would hope that if he's a CIA agent, he'll know at least how to hide well.
Right.
Because
you would hope.
Rosemary, I was thinking about this, and I'm thinking about, we've talked about it before, about how much of this is the messaging, the ability for Trump to message. So for the Democrats, there has to be this entire explanation. You have to talk about something as arcane as the Constitution and co-equal branches of government. Meanwhile, all he has to do is shoot out a tweet and the House starts crumbling down or the wall starts crumbling down, whatever the Democrats are trying to construct by way of explanation, he can just, in one tweet, just torpedo it.
He definitely knows what he's doing about messaging and branding and also empowering the agents who can support him. He's golfing with Lindsey Graham. And Graham is all over TV talking about how great the president is and how much under fire he is. And there's the message right there that Democrats have wanted to get him out since the day he was inaugurated, which is true. Mm-hmm. Let us not deny that. Mm-hmm. And now they've been grasping at straws, and now they've hit on something they think is it. That is his message, and it's extremely powerful because it is, as all of his messages are, based in part on truth. Mm-hmm. That's why what Adam Schiff did was really stupid. And of course, he's glommed on that. Knew he would. So the Democrats continue not to learn the lesson either about how to combat his messaging. We don't have it. Where Nancy Pelosi, I think, has come the closest. She's been real clear. We have no choice. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do this. You know, I didn't want to do this because you've been criticizing me for a year. And now I'm doing it because of what he did. I am forced to it. That should be what they keep on, I think.
Ewan?
My biggest worry over the past few days, and really few weeks, has been the question of at what point is anyone actually forced to turn over documents and how? And if this gets presumably to the Supreme Court to arbitrate, you know, Congress says you must deliver, and the White House says no. Are we going to get a decision that says executive privilege has bounds, or are we going to get something that says nope, you can keep all those documents secret, don't bother trying to investigate?
That won't stop an investigation. That'll stop the documents coming in. And I think the Democrats have rightly taken the position, many in the base already have, that you pursue impeachment because that's what's called for in the Constitution. That's what's called for by what's happened. And you set the record straight. And then when he's out of office, whenever that is, then this will come out.
Well, I think that the decision to begin the investigation as opposed to hold an impeachment trial is clearly correct.
Right.
You follow that, you see where it leads.
Right.
But I think it's difficult to do that if you can't get access to the information on which you need to proceed.
It definitely will be hard to convince any of the senators who would have to vote in a trial. vote in a trial. That sounds so funny. But yeah, essentially the jury. Mm-hmm.
But that's why it's lucky that we have the Office of the Inspector General involved. None of this might have seen the light of day without that office being involved in the intelligence community. And so we have like this semi-independent body whose job it is to do the investigation, because it dies at the Department of Justice. Yeah. It dies at the Supreme Court. It dies, like, yes. You know.
I would be happy if Giuliani and Barr ended up getting some sort of discipline for it. It doesn't. It could stop short of impeachment.
As lawyers, they should.
Absolutely.
So what is to stop the Inspector General from being fired?
Yeah, I was thinking about that on my drive-in this morning, and it took me to a really dark place. So I just grabbed my organic almonds and turned on the radio instead.
That would be very clearly obstruction of justice.
But
that would be impeachable.
Yeah, I mean,
to the Democrats who are in charge of impeachment.
Yeah, yeah. So there are obstruction of justice charges that could be brought, but you'd have to prove. I mean, it's just like James Comey. You'd have to prove that the firing was directly correlated to his decision.
Did any of you see I know you have to go to a break.
Well, we really do.
Okay.
Wait,
shut up.
Right
shut
now.
Up. I'll
and
shut up.
We'll, okay. You don't have to shut up. We'll just stop talking. That's all. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, Dan Arizari. We have Sarah Rogerson here, Ewan McNay, and Rosemary Armeo. Do you remember what you were going to say before the break?
I do remember. I wanted to ask you if any of you had read the article that came out in Politico looking at an analysis of the four times in America that we've gone to this impeachment level. It was fascinating. Basically, in every impeachment, you have to consider whether you should do it. Are the charges bad, and whether you can do it if there's political will. Mm. So the one time that you had both, Nixon, you could do it. Because he was not popular, and you should have done it because his charges were serious. It was completely successful. In fact, it didn't even go to full impeachment. Right. He left. The one time they did it when it was both things were wrong was Clinton. The charges were silly, and the American people in polls showed that they thought that. And they didn't have the political power because he was very popular in the Senate. Mm-hmm. It went nowhere. Johnson, back after the Civil War, had charges that were not worthy of impeachment, but he was hated. And so it ended up in impeachment, but with a no vote. And that's where we are now. Trump probably, it says, according to Politico, never before have we been so justified in looking at impeachment for a president, but McConnell. So they predict that it'll end up like the very first impeachment.
There's another great Politico article that talks about that compares the Clinton impeachment proceedings and the potential Trump impeachment proceedings, and says that Trump is at a disadvantage because the economy is bad.
Trump is
that the thing that saved Clinton was a good economy, and so they wanted to keep him in office in order to keep the economy moving.
He was also hugely popular, though, too.
Yes.
And he got more popular as he was impeached. There was a feeling that he was being put upon by the politicians.
I don't think there's been enough discussion about how bad this economy is for people in the middle class or in the low income. I mean, they are going at it hammer and tong as far as the safety net is concerned.
Yep.
And if you just walk into a grocery store and see the prices. If you're a regular shopper, I do the shopping in my home typically, and I can't believe we're talking about 20-30% increases. Wow. We're talking about a box of Triscuits costing like almost $4, and I can't have my cheese without my Triscuits, so I'm really upset about that. But I mean, just some things that people buy on a daily basis have gone up, and yet we continue to hear everything, well, not entirely without question, we continue to hear how great this economy is. No, it is not. Not for certain people, not for the middle class, who are continuing to have to pay higher drug prices, coverage, insurance coverage. I'm sorry. And nobody's really going at that part of it. And I wish they would. But impeachment will suck the oxygen. And a lot of the things that we need to be talking about, we're not going to be talking about.
Right, like the lowering of the refugee cap,
exactly.
Talking about groups of Americans that drive the economy. Recently arrived immigrants are major economic drivers. And the clampdown on through the public charge policy on people who might at some point need public benefits like food stamps. This administration is very anti-poor.
Yeah, and there are a lot of Trump's constituents that are being hurt by these policies and he has broadcast loud and clear for everyone to hear that if he's reelected, he is going to go at the social safety net mercilessly. Yep. He has said that.
Let's go to some letters, and then we'll move on to some of other aspects of all of this. Dan says, it was not the first time, that's a quote. Not enough attention is being paid to a footnote to the whistleblower's complaint, which Axios summarizes. Quote, White House officials stated it was not the first time that the Trump administration had used the system for the purpose of protecting politically sensitive rather than national security sensitive information, end quote. A single telephone call to Ukraine's president may not be sufficient to bring down the president, but exposing a series of similar acts establishing a habit of such immoral, if not illegal, behavior by the president of the United States just may be.
Totally agree.
Ewan?
I enjoyed the complaint in its entirety. It was a nice... You know, I assign writing pieces to my students, and I was pretty impressed with these guys, girls, whoever's writing. It was well laid out. It was logical. It didn't go beyond the facts. I think it's a convincing document.
Jay Sekulow has maintained that no whistleblower wrote this, that it was done by a lawyer.
Yeah.
If so, did you think that, Sarah? And
if so,
what's wrong with that?
Nothing. The lawyer's job is to make sure our clients sound the best. So I think any whistleblower is wise to meet with counsel before filing anything anywhere with anyone, because the lawyers, especially the lawyers who handle these types of issues, can tell them how to word things. I wouldn't be surprised if he had consulted with a lawyer prior to polishing up. I wouldn't think that the first draft was written by a lawyer. There's no way. We can't do that as lawyers. But typically what we do is we have the client draft up their version of events, and then we walk them through organizing those thoughts in a way that's compelling.
So Sekulow making a big point of that is more messaging. That's Democrats angling and finagling.
Everybody hates lawyers. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. we're one of the top five most hated professions. I think we're number one.
We're journalists. We're up there, too.
Journalists,
police
officers.
Well, and congressional.
Right. I mean, don't forget. You're more popular than Congress.
Yeah.
Well, that's because lots of us are there. So, I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons why I became a lawyer, because I looked up to our federal government because I felt like they were doing something important.
Lee writes, in the long run and the short run, I truly wish that the motivation for removing the current administration could be the damage it is doing to our planet in the long run. And in the short run, as it gets darker and darker for Donald Trump, I become more and more concerned about his access to some mighty dangerous dogs that he can wag.
I would agree with that. Who knows when that might happen?
You know, back in Politico, they note that in the last days of the Nixon administration, the Secretary of Defense said, don't do anything that you're told to by the president without checking with me first.
Wow. We don't have those people around anymore. They got
Correct.
Fired.
Yeah. There's no one who will say no or even argue. One of the things that Trump likes about Giuliani is that he never pushes back. He will just agree with whatever Donald says.
Can we just take a comic aside here and say how much Trump and Giuliani resemble a demented, psychotic Laurel and Hardy?
I hadn't thought about it that way, Dan. But
and the kooky, you know what I'm saying? Giuliani's all over the place, and Donald's very serious with his red, white, and blue. And I swear it's Laurel and Hardy.
Skinny. Sorry, I'm the one who always brings up physical attributes, but that fits too.
Really?
Well, all right.
Saturday Night Live, if you're listening.
Yeah, well, that they nailed that, too. Erica is, this is on Lindsey Graham, Rosemary. Mm-hmm. Could there be a quid pro quo agreement between Lindsey Graham and Trump/Russia? How else to explain Graham's bizarre about-face and blind obedience to Trump? This is how Trump operates. He gets dirt on people and uses it as leverage.
Wow.
Yeah, I find Lindsey Graham, his whole metamorphosis from harsh critic, you know, reliably harsh, kind of colorfully harsh, to sycophant is just astounding.
Well, it's all about power. And I mean, I think, you know, Donald didn't have the power when Lindsey Graham was making all of those assertions. And Lindsey Graham himself was after that amount of power. And it changes once you have the person in the White House.
How can you be John McCain's best friend and turn into this?
Power.
Wow.
It's a lot of power.
Russ writes, the impeachment inquiry will die in the Senate each time the whistleblower scandal comes up. However, the name Biden will be dragged through vague innuendo and shady rumors. The net result of the process will be the crippling of the Biden campaign. This will clear the field of a moderate Democratic contender.
Disagree.
You know, maybe that will happen in the long term. It seems as though the focus really has been more on the president and what's been going on more than...
Well, and I don't think that Biden's the only moderate contender. And I also think that shady innuendo has been roiling his campaign for quite some time. I wouldn't be upset if this was the thing that took him out of the running, because we have a really wonderful field mm-hmm. of Democrats, and there are many more than Biden who are moderate. They just aren't white and male.
I totally agree with her. It would not be bad for me if he were taken out along with Barr and Giuliani and other misfits.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how much of this sticks to him.
Yeah.
Because it's going to start appearing in polls.
Legitimate. Aside from the Trump thing, I do think that's the main story. His son's involvement in that energy company is absolutely worthy of investigation.
And, of course, the Senate can't kill the inquiry. It can only have a negative vote in the trial.
Right.
So Sean writes on this subject, as a Democrat, I find it disturbing that Hunter Biden served in a high-paying position with a lobbying firm that advised a Ukrainian energy company while his father was vice president. What could his contribution to that company be other than his proximity to power? On the face of it, that's wrong. It looks corrupt and is corrupt. Washington has become a big cash grab no matter what side you're on. Elizabeth Warren is right about corruption all around, and Joe Biden called for the investigator checking out his bad company to be fired. Wow. It's easy to kick Trump, which you do so well every day, but take a look at the whole picture. Both Dems and GOP behave like bad actors, says Sean.
Except, as somebody, I think it was Jake Tapper, pointed out, are you going to outlaw sitting on these corporate boards mm-hmm. for people who might have conflict? I mean, even the, arm's length kind, that you might infer that they have some kind of conflict. I mean, there are boards all over the country that put people on simply because of their names.
Yeah.
What Jay Tapper pointed out was, if you want to do that, outlaw these relative appointments. That's great, but it's not being followed right now.
Start with the Trumps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And they get to walk in and out of the White House whenever they please.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters, and we also have other topics to discuss. We will get to those and talk to our panel right after this short break. Two quick letters here, and then we'll go into other topics. Sarah writes, could Rosemary please detail the Schiff error that she referenced this morning? This has to do with the hearing last week.
It was
week.
The start of the hearing where they listened to National Intelligence Director. And Schiff began the hearing by recounting the dialogue between Trump and the president of Ukraine. Only he did it as a parody. He made it a mafia boss talking to one of his subjects. Hey, you got to do me a favor. He used the gruff voice. He made Trump sound like a mafia boss. And he goes, that's in essence what the president said. And as he was doing it, I was screaming at the radio saying, don't do that. Just read the real dialogue. It's bad enough. And so Trump and every Republican on the committee really said to him that was uncalled for and unfair and biased. His response has been that he did that to explain more fully what the Democrats see in that phone call, that it was a thuggery, that it was a extortion.
Which anywhere else but on that particular chamber would have been fine.
But not there. Yeah, you're right.
There was a comment on NPR a few days ago that from a mafia a prosecutor who'd prosecuted mafia bosses, then none of them would have been this stupid. You would never have this clear a phone call as evidence.
Okay. Now, see, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, because no, you wouldn't really have it on the phone. You would meet under the bridge.
Right.
Outside of the car.
And yet, Republicans are saying, no, that's just what Trump says. It's a perfect phone call. There's no quid pro quo in that. I would like to be open to that discussion, but I just don't see it.
How do you continue to make the argument, right, to these Republicans to keep with stay with me? Don't they realize that the runway is running out on them? I mean,
I think Jeff Flake, didn't he say, if there was an anonymous vote, it wouldn't just be 30 Republicans that would vote for impeachment. He said it would be more like 35.
Profiles encourage that.
Well, Jeff Flake has been outspoken At times, when convenient,
right.
For the last several years.
Has quit. Yeah.
But it's interesting. I do think that there's that some of this is falling apart.
Freda writes, I agree with the panel on how skilled Trump is at getting to so many people with a tweet. What can we learn from this? His tweets are brief, to the point, easily remembered. Witch hunt, hoax, treason. We need to design a takeaway message in the same fashion, brief, to the point, and easily remembered.
Mm.
What the brief message is, I don't know. Certainly our Democratic leaders or their writers could do this.
I think Seth Meyers would be, like we're talking about, he would be great at that, probably.
Yeah.
I just hire him.
Like on, you know, explaining things in a detailed fashion is okay too, right? I mean,
agree.
The problem is that we live in a culture where people are constantly streaming reading.
We talked about it as far as messaging, but it is, I don't know. I don't know if we need to, the Democrats need to go back by coming up with snappy names, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to see the Democratic explanation on a baseball hat. I just don't.
No.
I think citizens, informed citizenry discusses these matters. They don't have to sit there and be fed a message. That's advertising.
Right. And that's the problem, because you live in a society where everything is spectacle. I was talking actually at Siena to a journalism class. And I said, you know, go back and read, and I know I've mentioned it here, and it hasn't gotten too much traction, but there is a situationist tract that was written back in the 20s called Society of the Spectacle. And it really describes this particular moment. And the situationists, let's face it, they didn't get that much traction. But there were some very interesting explanations of what we are seeing in terms of the packaging of this particular culture and the commodification of so many different things, and how, as a society, we're just watching this happen and made to feel powerless in the face of this commodification of everything. And I just suggest that people go back and read that. I know the French are a little terse, but it's worth a read because it really does
society
a great job.
Society of the Spectacle.
Society of the Spectacle. Guy Dubois.
Interesting.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. The House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, the aforementioned, said Sunday that his panel has reached an agreement to secure testimony from the anonymous whistleblower whose detailed complaint launched an impeachment investigation into President Trump. This from the Washington Post. The announcement from Schiff came on the same day that Tom Bossert, this is what we mentioned earlier, a former Homeland Security advisor, delivered a rebuke of the president, saying in an interview that he was deeply disturbed by the implication of Trump's recently reported actions. So the members of Congress are returning to their districts for a two-week recess, during which they will either have to make the case for Trump's impeachment or defend him to voters amid mounting questions about his conduct. In appearances over the weekend, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi offered a preview of the Democratic message, casting the impeachment inquiry as a somber task that she chose to endorse only as a last resort. But let's focus for a moment on the agreement to secure testimony from the anonymous whistleblower. How do you do that?
I worry about that a lot, not only because I there's no way to screen which members of this House Intelligence Committee can keep a secret. And in the minority, I mean, we have Elise Stefanik from the North Country, Will Hurt, a bunch of Texans and Ohioans, and Rick Crawford of Arkansas. I just worry that that there's so much political pressure on these folks, if not if they really want to stick to their word and keep the identity of this person to themselves. I worry that there's enough political pressure that the president will get what he wants, and this person will be in really grave.
Look, his name is going to come out. You don't whistleblow at this level and it not come out. And you're right, Congress is a sieve, and that's why we always look for reports that are being kept secret by the president to go to Congress, because they come out. But this guy has a lawyer. He works with the CIA.
He has four.
He has many lawyers, and good ones, I hope, and they have got to be ready to protect him now. That's their job now. It's not the press. That's why the New York Times trying to talk about who he was so interesting to me. Was that right or wrong? They're trying to make a very serious charge authentic and give it credence. That's commendable. On the other hand, is it the press's job to protect that man? Not really. Mm. It's his lawyers right now. Right.
However, how long was Deep Throat not?
35 no. years. That yes.
35
kept.
Years. So there's, you know, one
but that's
thing
different. He was a source. He was, and he never gave the information, Dan. He only verified what Woodward and Bernstein found from other sources.
But here's the other point. How much has Trump alienated the intelligence community? Does anybody really think that somebody's going to go out and try to find this guy if he were to say, hey, by the way, you go out and find this guy?
I think Sarah's right. I think many people in the White House, I think Trump has a good idea of who it is right now because there's so few people, an analyst with the CIA attached to the White House over a certain period of time. Malcolm Nann said that this past week. Mm-hmm. It's known. It just isn't known by the wide majority of us.
So what does that mean about whistleblower protections for the future? I mean, I know we've been talking a lot about, well, certain members have been talking about this as far as, I guess on both sides, it's being talked about. And I don't know.
It shows that it works to some extent, because otherwise it would have died in the Department of Justice and we never would have, we wouldn't have heard about it 3 weeks ago when it was essentially the Department of Justice saying, we're not really going to move this along. And so it shows that the system works. It shows some important holes in the system. And I think it was designed by our forefathers without having this experiment in democracy to hold it accountable. And now that we see what happens when we have a person in the White House like this, that we need to strengthen those protections for whistleblowers.
So you have the whistleblower go before the House Intelligence Committee. What do you learn beyond what was in that complaint?
I think you will learn, for me, the reading this, what I find most interesting is that the Republicans continue to portray this as a secondhand report. Jim Jordan was on Jim Tapper yesterday saying that this is not reliable. It's just secondhand. It's hearsay. And that is not the way the CIA or reporters put their work together. You consult a whole range of people who could give you alternative viewpoints and ideas of what was going on. So I think that if you heard from him why he was so concerned, when he came to be so concerned, because he knows of other cases, and how he went to about putting together the report, that would be really interesting information.
And I think that's why the White House is so freaking scared of what's about to come out.
Because his report will only look better as you analyze it rather than weaker.
Yeah, well, and he originally gave the report to another member of the CIA to bring forward because in order to protect his anonymity, but it was drafted by him. So I think maybe people are getting their reporting confused as to, you know, the chain of events leading up to.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, he had originally, for the internal CIA complaint, that was delivered to the CIA lawyers by another person.
I also would like to point out, as an investigative reporter, I have long valued whistleblowers. They are amazingly brave people, and not just to go against government. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Wigand became a whole movie when he talked about what the tobacco companies were doing. Mm-hmm. He had all of corporate America, the strongest lawyers, the most scary people against him, and he did it because he felt that it was right. Mm-hmm. He lost. He lost a lot of things, his career, his family for a while. And this guy also is, his life is on the line right now. And that's not an exaggeration.
The Wigand story is fascinating. I was just seeing the Mike Wallace documentary where they talk about the CBS 60 Minutes. And basically CBS, this major company,
was threatened
and they were ready to squash the story.
Yeah, I mean, you have, again, there's like all these creative, high-paid legal minds looking at how you can squelch the whistleblower report on the tobacco companies. And now we have the whole might, really, of the federal government, starting with Bill Barr, who is no stupid man, who is working against this whistleblower complaint. That takes some guts.
And what makes it really impactful is that a lot of us get so cynical about politics and about life in general. And all it takes is one person to take a principal stand and say, I don't care what it costs, this is how much is at stake, and go ahead and do such a thing. And it's really encouraging. I mean, in spite of everything else that we see, that one person held our government and our Constitution in such high regard. He said, I don't care what price I pay.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Danny Rosario is here. Sarah Rogerson, Ewan McNay, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Rosemary Armeo, Ewan McNay, Rosemary. No, I just mentioned
just
Rosemary. Yes.
Rosemary
Rogerson.
So nice. We met her twice.
Sarah Armeo.
I don't think you're ever
Rosemary
heard
Rosemary Rogerson.
Yeah. Sarah Rogerson and Dan Arizari. We welcome you and your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to those real quick, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. Melissa says, I just listened to how the previous letter regarding Biden corruption was handled. Two glaring facts that were not addressed is the fact that the Ukrainian prosecutor that was fired was corrupt. There was GOP, Democratic, and international support for his removal. Correct?
Yes, correct.
This was not Biden flying solo, rather as directed. Also, he was not investigating Hunter Biden at the time of his removal. If we are going to repeat conspiracy theories and amplify them, it is important to properly debunk them.
Look.
Thank you. That's
this
true.
This is not a conspiracy theory that I'm saying is worthy of investigation. It's actually the involvement of Hunter Biden in that company, not whether he was never investigated, and the company itself was investigated and found not failing in any Ukrainian laws. That doesn't change that an American citizen with ties to the top administration was involved in a shady deal. That is worthy of investigation. That's it.
Mm. It's important context, though.
Yeah. Yes. So we move on then to Ed, who says, answering questions about Biden family corruption with, well, Trump and his family are corrupt, too, is not going to help Biden get elected.
Also true.
Jeremy says, Senator Graham said when questioned on how he could become a Trump supporter after he and his recently departed good friend, Senator McCain, were such Trump critics, he said that as a politician, it is critical for him to stay relevant. While he was friends with John McCain, he was also aware how his relationship with him kept him politically relevant. I believe that he has latched onto Trump to maintain political relevance. This would qualify as the complete opposite of a profile in courage. In my opinion, he and Mitch McConnell are cut from the same cloth.
It's opportunism. It's, I want to stay in power. I want to be close to power. I want to golf with the most powerful man in the world, and that's what it's all about.
Ben says, the panel insists Adam Schiff was wrong to theatrically portray Trump's actions with Ukraine as a mafia don. I disagree. That was an effective way to show how the actions connect and what they really mean in a very understandable way that cuts through the absurd rhetorical arguments in Trump's favor. Unfortunately, this kind of insistence on being proper and above it all is why Democrats are usually unable to counter Republican messaging. Maybe the voting population should all just take a few days off from work to read the entire Mueller report as well.
I think that makes a valid point. I do, because it is a synopsis of everything that happened in that phone call. But unfortunately, you know, we've kind of lost our sense of humor. Not that the Republicans
have. You have
one.
To know your audience. And yeah, Schiff was talking to a it's committee true. That was filled with Republicans who were going to attack everything being said by the Democrats.
It's true.
It was foolish.
He's also not Mr. Ha Ha.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
it's true. Yeah, he should have had somebody stand in for him and deliver that.
Doug says, please stop harping on statutory crimes like bribery and extortion. They have nothing to do with impeachment. It is not necessary to prove the existence of a quid pro quo to impeach Trump. Asking a foreign entity to assist in our elections is enough
yes.
to prove abuse of power and high crimes and misdemeanors. We will get him on the statutory crimes after he leaves office and Pence is gone. We were just talking about this during the break, actually.
Yeah. Yep. This is totally true, but to me, the reason I brought it up, Mr. Listener, is that the Republicans are saying, oh, there's no quid pro quo in here. I realize you don't have to prove it, but I thought it was in the phone call. He days after freezing that money, he's saying, yeah, yeah, we've done a lot for you. Remember how much we've done for you. You need to do me a favor. It seems,
it's what Cohen said about him, right? You don't have to get a direct order. You know what he wants you to do.
Exactly.
And you
so
go
that,
out
that's
and do
why
it.
It's driving me crazy. But your point is right. Yeah, high crimes and misdemeanors. It's another thing that misdemeanors is too widely interpreted in its modern usage as a little crime. And that's not what the Constitution means.
Well, and the same phone call. You know, oh, Mr. President, I stayed in your hotel. Can we say emoluments again?
John says, given that the CIA pulled out an important asset in Russia several months ago, and now the whistleblower being a CIA analyst within the White House, is this a larger indication of a real war between the CIA and the White House? Ooh, pounds of drink.
That is intriguing.
That's cool. That's good.
I wouldn't paint it as war. I would just say principal stance against the White House. It's not like they have a particular axe to grind. It's that they're pursuing, you know, our common defense.
Well, it certainly also signals a lack of trust in the between the CIA and the White House in terms of, like, the CIA doesn't trust the White House to keep important national secrets.
Right.
Hey, can we talk out loud about what we were mentioning on the break about who persuaded the president or encouraged his belief that he should release the non-transcript? There's some reporting that it was Mitch McConnell. And then there was that odd vote, a unanimous resolution by the Senate, i.e. McConnell had to engineer that to persuade, to say to the president, release it. Yeah. So is McConnell possibly, because he could not have been surprised at the reaction to the non-transcript.
No.
So what does he want that Trump hasn't given him yet? Do we know anything about
me?
That?
I don't
know. Pence as president?
Maybe. He'd be a lot more manageable.
Much.
Than
that is true.
I want them both out, and then Pelosi as president.
We haven't.
Yeah, let's get him done.
That'd
yeah.
be fun.
Now that's
we haven't
a
talked
dream.
About Kurt Volker either.
Oh, yes. That's
So the U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine has resigned one day after the release of a whistleblower report alleging a cover-up by the White House of a call between President Donald Trump and Ukraine's president. Okay. So why does he leave?
Who knows what else we don't know. Yeah.
Pushed out?
Well, there's another theory that if he's not a member of the administration, he cannot be constrained by executive privilege or order from the
White
House.
Although everything that was privileged while he was in service
could
is still privileged.
Right.
But if there's a way around that, because we find out enough to pierce through that veil, then we'll see what happens.
Can we just get him on a talk show and have him hold forth and say, you know, this administration is feckless and ridiculous and... Just my opinion.
We never get that. You know, Mattis came out with the book. It doesn't name Trump directly. Yeah. And the guy this weekend who said, we tried to talk him out of the conspiracy theories in vain. But I don't see anything impeachable. We never get. Have we ever gotten someone who's left the administration who said, it was just a joke, I had to run for my life? No.
Omarosa, did she say that? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But she was selling a book.
All right, we go to Sally, who says, if you're a woman, Anita Hill, Christine Blasey Ford, no one listens or believes. Disgraceful misogyny and prejudice. I 100% believe both women. What did they have to gain? Their lives were shattered, and this is about whistleblowers that we believe men.
Good
we don't believe the women.
Good point.
All right, and then final letter for the moment here. We have them, but I just want to move on to some other stuff. Stewart says the one thing that the news media and Congress has to continually hammer home is that all of Trump's actions are a breach of the Constitution. A simple explanation of why. Kathy said your discussion regarding branding and tweets versus explaining things in more detail has me thinking, why not brand Democrat message regarding impeachment and explain in detail? It's a new day. Trump is capturing a large segment of people with tweets. Time to suck it up. The Dems need to do the same thing. Start branding while also explaining.
Can I make a point about Nancy Pelosi and something I think that was very strategic and I don't think got enough attention? When she talked about impeachment, she made a statement that's included the words, we want to go about this seriously, and she said prayerfully. Mm-hmm. And why that's interesting is because the right has hijacked religious vocabulary. And it is a shame that the left has allowed that to happen. I know that there are people who don't like talk of religion, but how can you look at this president who lies on a constant basis and allow him to hold the moral high ground over you? And I think Nancy saying what she did was the right move.
Because she said she's it saying, repeatedly.
Yeah,
too.
And
you're
she's
right,
saying,
yeah.
this is not something, I take it so seriously that I'm on my knees, figuratively speaking, asking God for direction. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, personally.
All right, let's move on and go to now. What is it? We touched on this, but so Democrats are there's recess. They're going back to their home districts, and they are, for want of a better term, selling impeachment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They are treading carefully back home on the impeachment investigation, and of course, what it means for 2020. So the question I have for the panel is, this tricky balancing act is now underway for House Democrats as they return. Well, how tricky do you think it is, and what needs to, obviously it depends on the district, right? It depends on the district, but how do you, and I think you were talking about this earlier, Sarah, how do you make your case for reelection while also saying, yeah, we really have to do something?
They're far enough into their term to do that, right? So especially the new ones who have recently come into power. I forget her last name. Her first name's Mikey. She's from New Jersey. She was profiled by the New York Times a couple of months ago. And then there's another freshman in Michigan. And both of them are women. And both of them are saying, we're not coming out in favor of impeachment because we need to govern. We have we have really important issues in our districts, and we want to work on
Sherrill.
Those. Mikey Sherrill, she's the one. That was their talking point on impeachment, because, you know, as a freshman congresswoman, that's your job, is to represent your district, get to know your district, understand their issues, and push for legislation that addresses them. Now there's more of an opening because they've laid that foundation. They've been able to get on some bills. They've been able to demonstrate to their communities that they're working in their favor. So they're sort of cutting short the narrative, like all you care about is getting Trump, because they're actually doing the work. And for anybody who's elected, who wants to take a controversial position in a district that's pretty moderate, you need to at least bring home the goods for your community. Because at the end of the day, that's what you can stand on.
This is anecdotal, but there was an interview with Cory Booker on CNN this morning, and they were talking to him about a congressman from New Jersey who was having a town meeting over the weekend, and nobody talked about impeachment. It never got to that. Everybody was talking about other issues because, you know, there are other things going on. And except for just that it was in the air. And the senator said, well, you know, I think we have to look at all of it, and there's our duty, and that's what we have to do. But don't you think also it's just implied? I mean, I think that
yeah.
audience for a Democratic
to a degree, yeah.
congressional representative yeah. would just say, okay, duh, let's talk about other stuff.
Elizabeth Warren made the point that, you know, Congress people are capable of doing two things at once.
Right.
And Nancy Pelosi needs to manage that. She needs to move forward, important to the domestic audience, you know, their life issues, while at the same time pursuing letting the impeachment inquiry stay with the committee for a while.
I mean, I think an effective strategy would be to go at Trump. You know how the Republicans for years have been going at Democrats at their strengths, right? So John Kerry, he's a Vietnam War veteran. They go after him on that. I think the Democrats should take a page from the Republicans and say, Trump drapes himself in red, white, and blue, sticks a flag on his lapel, and then packages himself as the most patriotic person. Well, I think the Democrats should take a lesson from that and say, and drape themselves in the flag that this is about America. This is about the Constitution. This is about the foundation of our democracy. And hit that message home constantly, that it's about patriotism, not about whatever the Republicans are trying to paint it about. I really think that would help.
And there aren't, I mean, the Democrats that are doing the heavy lifting on impeachment are people who have been in office for a while. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that day to day have to put the pen to paper, mm-hmm. write the reports, sit through the hearings. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is going to be a vote at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And it's Nancy Pelosi's job to and others to whip them all into mm-hmm. whatever the vote needs to be. So day to day, impeachment's not going to impact those, not just the freshmen, but those lawmakers who aren't centrally involved in mm-hmm. the process of impeachment. That's mm-hmm. the way it should be. Mm-hmm. America keeps running. We should talk mm-hmm. about all these other things. Flint still has a water crisis, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 787 might come down.
You know, I certainly understand that, but one of the criticisms that has been leveled against some of the presidential candidates in the debates is that they haven't gone after Trump. They've been talking about yeah. other things, and they haven't said, okay, but we are, this country's a mess because of this president of the United States, and we have to get rid of him, and I'm leading the charge to do that. Do Democrats in the House, whether their seat is solidly blue or more purple, have to do the same thing, and do they pay a price if they don't do that?
I think Harris has done some of that in some of these debates, I must say. I don't think that they've been totally silent about that.
Biden has totally. He's been attacking Trump heavily.
No, but I'm talking about the congressional representatives. Do they do the same thing? The complaint has been, I agree but that has come after some of these comments have come after there have been complaints that the Democrats have not done enough of saying that, this is really bad. So, and then that leads us finally in our last 2 minutes to Joe Biden. Some supporters voicing concern about his campaign is not prepared to weather the dual political rip current suddenly reshaping the 2020 race, an onslaught of attacks on his family from President Trump, and a tightened contest for the Democratic nomination. Several allies, including top financial backers, are weighing whether to create a super PAC to independently defend Biden and go after the president, or other supporters caution that a more aggressive approach could cut against Biden's above-the-fray appeal and warn him against losing sight of Senator Elizabeth Warren, whose steady march in popularity has eroded Biden's standing and given her narrow leads over him in several recent polls in early voting states. So if you're Joe Biden, how do you play it?
I can't get over the resounding message that he should really just step down. They weren't prepared to handle the few missteps that he's had, especially the first debate, which he completely bombed, and then half of his staff leaked information to the press that made his campaign look very disorganized. They're not going to be able to weather this storm. I think he should just step down. He doesn't have to do this.
But there's a real problem because, and from my point of view, his support in the black community is so critical. And would it shift if he was out of the picture?
Yes.
I'm sure it would. But right now, I think there's serious trepidation about that particular block of people. Because if the Democrats lose them, it's going to be 2016 all over again.
Well, that's Biden needs to start thinking like a Democrat and not about Biden, right? So what should the Democrats do about this? And should Biden be handled by the Democratic Party to give those votes or to encourage people to vote for Elizabeth Warren or Cory Booker or Kamala Harris?
Oh, I expect that he will as soon as if he doesn't win. I don't actually doubt that he will then be a strong supporter of whoever does win the nomination.
It's hard for me to believe that many blacks will vote for Trump. Should there be no other Democrat that they don't like, they may not vote at all, but that still doesn't help, that doesn't help Trump. I would not be bereft if Biden fell out of the race. I didn't think he was a good candidate. But I think there are decisions beyond the party. It's his family. He said, my family's ready for this. And they're not. They've been attacked terribly by this. Mm. I think he did a disservice to the party and to his family.
We're out of time, but my thanks to all of you for. Did you have a? If you have a 15-second point, go for it.
During the break, I was looking for some semblance of hope in the news. It looks as though the Affordable Care Act is in fact measurably making America healthier. There you go.
All right.
Yay.
Oh, that is good.
Too bad.
Ewan, thank you very much.
I feel better.
Dan, don't forget the Hispanic Heritage Month and the events taking place this weekend and on the 4th and the 5th and the 14th and 15th. And you can check out Capital District Latinos on Facebook for more. Thanks for being here, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Sarah, Ewan, and Rosemary, thank you all for being here. We'll continue right after this short break.